He's my friend. He does things for me.
They've listened to it. We know they clicked on the link.
That's a big difference. I click on the link. I don't listen to this thing.
Ken just sits hits refresh.
Well, why should
that's 35 of them.
Yeah, you know, why should I listen to it? I said it, or you said it, and I heard you.
You don't know how he's editing this together.
That's true. We could come off very interestingly, and probably have. In any case, the Colonel... Miami Steve wants us to introduce the podcast.
And?
I suppose we'd better. He won't leave us alone till we do.
He's waving this thing in my face.
I know. It's not the first time he's waved a thing in your face either.
Well, it's the same thing every week.
I know. It's so monotonous.
Anyway, I'm Justin Souther.
And I'm Ken Hankey.
Where are we?
We're in the we're at the bar in the cinema lounge. Before you correct me again, you little bitch,
in the Carolina Asheville on Hendersonville Road,
which you insist is in Skyland.
They get a South Asheville sign now.
Ah, well, now it's in South Asheville and not Skyland. Skyland exists no longer.
It does in my heart.
Oh, well, that's nice. In any case, we've been to the movies, and we're going to convey the trauma and joy of that experience to you. And what did we see?
Some movies. We already said that.
Oh, but what were they?
Well, what do you want to talk about first?
It doesn't matter. I saw all of them, more or less.
Well, some less than others.
I only saw one of them. We'll savor that one then.
Oh, will we?
Yeah, okay. Well,
why don't you tell us about Kung Fu Panda 2, which I don't... Did that make money?
I didn't see it at the box office. It's number two. I mean, it got the crap beat out of it by The Hangover Part 2, Part Roman Numeral 2. Let's make it as classy as humanly possible, which is the dumbest thing you could possibly want to do with this movie. I suspect it will do okay, ultimately. I mean, it had a, you know... If this had been a September opening, it would have been great. It's
Kung Fu Panda.
It's Kung Fu Panda, but I mean, the thing about it is it's better looking than the first film, and the first film was pretty darn nice looking. This is one of the most beautiful animated things I've ever seen. Don't start.
Ken's like very knowledgeable in animated things.
I am. You should come over and I'll show you sometime. Anyway.
What about reanimated things?
Well, reanimated things is a whole different area of expertise, and I don't have any. In any case, it's beautiful to look at. It has... The first film went for an emotional kick that it never got. Uh-huh. This one actually has it. But it has a central problem, and that is that no one seems to have paid attention to the fact that what made the first film so memorable comically was the byplay with Jack Black and Dustin Hoffman. So, it opens, there's a setup, there's a setup thing which doesn't have anything to do with anybody that we know. And then we have some stuff that involves Jack Black and Master Shinfu, who is Dustin Hoffman. And then we have the center of the film, which has no Dustin Hoffman in it, until we get to the very end of the film, where we have a little more Dustin Hoffman. And it
Dustin Hoffman's voice. He's not actually in the movie.
Are you absolutely certain that Dustin Hoffman is not in reality a red panda?
Yes.
Oh, well, okay. Nonetheless, as a supposed benefit we have far more Angelina Jolie as the Tigress than we had in the first film. It's not a good trade. The others, Seth Rogen, Jackie Chan, Lucy Liu, pretty much David Cross, don't have a whole lot to do. Gary Oldman makes a splendid villain. God knows, after Red Riding Hood, I was doubting this. He didn't have anything nearly as funny to say as Lock Them Up and the Elephant, but, you know, he's a good villain, very good villain. We have guest artists in the guise of Dennis Haysbert, who I guess it's nice to see him get something besides Allstate commercials, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, who, if he said anything, I missed it. So I'm not real sure what his level of participation was in a voice acting film. Possibly he did say something and it just was so incredibly memorable, or possibly unintelligible, that I just don't remember it. So I recommend it. I could have loved it if they hadn't sidelined Dustin Hoffman's character. But visually, it's actually worth shelling out the extra $3.50 to $5 to see it in 3D. So there.
And I guess on the other side of the spectrum, the opening Friday, as opposed to animated Kung Fu Kids movies, we have Meek's Cutoff.
You want to go with Meek, or you want to go with The Hangover?
I don't care.
First?
You do this then. Well, what do you want to do, Ken?
I don't care.
We'll do The Hangover.
I don't want to do The Hangover.
No, it's too late.
Oh, yeah.
We both saw part of The Hangover.
I saw.
Ken decided to go sneak into movies.
Yeah, and he tried to bust me for it too.
Like some 14-year-old sneaking into an R-rated movie.
Believe me, I don't have any trouble getting ID'd. Anyway, yes, we both saw. You saw all of The Hangover, you say, and yeah, I saw.
I went to the bathroom at one point.
Oh well, you
so
might
I
have
missed probably a couple.
You
minutes.
Might have missed something primo there, and I saw about the last 75 minutes of it. So,
okay. So I only saw slightly more, but you never saw the original.
I never saw the original, so I can't really compare that. This is essentially the same movie all over again.
It is.
Okay.
It really is.
Yeah, but it's got a cigarette-smoking monkey.
That's the only thing it adds.
Well, that's something in itself.
Yeah, that's true.
Simeon Value should not be sneered at.
But even you will agree that monkey's not in that movie nearly enough.
No, and I don't like the way it ends with him.
I don't see how the thing got shot and is still alive.
Well, there's not only that, but I don't understand this whole thing about leaving him at the door of a veterinarian and assuming he's going to be fine. Well, of course, the character who's doing it is a maroon, so...
Right. Nevertheless.
Nevertheless. The monkey is, however, good when the monkey's in the film.
Uh-huh. And everybody in the movie is fine.
Everybody's fine.
It just depends on how much you are in tune with this material, which I never found it uncomfortable or painful, but...
Well, other people seem to find it, you know, absolutely, that it crosses the line and becomes disgusting. And there was a threshold of disgust, but I wasn't. The only thing that kind of bothered me is the fact that nobody seems to be even slightly worried about this guy's finger.
Yeah. Well, I assumed it would be, oh, it's not his finger. Which turns out it is his finger.
Yeah, it is his finger. Yeah,
nobody cares.
No, nobody
or
cares.
That there would
and
be...
His family doesn't care. His parents don't care. Nobody gives a
even
shit.
Even though they set up that he's going to be a surgeon and...
Yeah.
He's this great cellist. But nobody seems to care.
Well, he had a good time, yeah. You see. I think that's the
no
whole...
one that is listening to this who hasn't seen the movie is going to have a clue what we're talking about.
That's true. To me, the funniest thing in the movie, apart from the monkey, was a bit of pantomime towards the end where Mr. Zach throws out the anchor on a landed boat.
Oh, yeah.
That was the only time I actually laughed out loud. I think I snickered at something else.
I laughed at the photo of him holding the gun to the...
Oh, that is... Now, that actually is kind of tasteless.
Yeah, no, that's why it was funny. Because it was... Oh, they actually did cross the line.
Yeah, that one is kind of crossing the line. Of course, a variation on that, although it is used to make a point, is in the Magic Christian.
I've also seen an animated version of that where somebody's blow drying the guy's hair.
Oh, okay.
Hello. Hi. This is Laura Marie, everyone.
Hi. It's nice to meet you.
Likewise.
And you remember Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hello.
You guys match today.
What's that?
You guys kind of match today. Well,
oh,
not really.
No.
You
know,
we always try and coordinate.
No, yeah, we do. It's a thing we do because it's good for us to do this.
Talking about The Hangover.
Two? The second one?
As a monkey.
One of my friend's dad said it was crazy. So.
Did you think it was crazy?
No.
No.
Oh, are you guys dads?
He's a dad.
Are either of you dads?
Ken's sort of a dad. But I don't like it. Capital D dad.
I'm not even sure what that means.
Do you have a dad coffee mug?
I was just wondering.
My daughter
knows
better than to give me something like a dad coffee. I did have a world's greatest father coffee cup at one point.
You strike me as a father.
Yeah. No, I do not watch golf. My wife watches golf. It's on. The sad thing is I'm starting to recognize players.
My dad watches golf when the HBO is out.
You know, par, birdie, par, bogey. And that's all I say.
Can you guys talk about movies I want to know about? So
I don't know.
Listen to this later.
We're still talking about The Hangover.
Okay.
Because Steve's going to want me to tell what it's about, which it's the same as the first movie. If you saw the first one, you're going to know what this one is.
Yeah, these guys go out. Mr. Zach drugs them, and they wake up and
don't remember what happened.
And
they have to go find somebody.
They have to figure out what happened and what happened to.
And all the crazy stuff that happened.
Yes.
If you like the first one, you'll probably like this one, but you're not going to be like.
Did the audience you see it with, did they like it? Okay.
I was sitting next to this middle-aged couple. There's actually three of them. I think it was like
three middle-aged couples all together.
It was
a
couple and. An extra person. I can't remember
it's
which gender.
Don't you know what a menage is?
Yes.
Okay.
It
was a middle-aged menage.
And they thought it was wild. You tell.
They thought it was crazy. Okay.
I think it's for people with much more delicate sensibilities than us to find as groundbreaking. When really
I've seen early John Waters. You really can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost impossible to offend me.
Not speaking of which, actually.
No. Oh, you mean
talking about what opens this week?
Opens this Friday.
You have reviewed.
Which I have reviewed, which I have seen, which is Kelly Reichardt's Meek's Cutoff that I keep wanting to call Meek's Crossing, but it is not.
No.
It is Meek's Cutoff, and the fact that I like this movie is shocking because I thought her last
big
film...
Wendy and Lucy
oh,
fan.
God, no, I thought Wendy and Lucy was boring as hell. This, on the other hand, is the same sort of minimalist filmmaking, which is not something I'm wild about, as a rule. And it's about a wagon train, and there was such a wagon train. It was much bigger than the one in the movie, led by a man named Stephen Meek. Yes. No, well, I think that they played fast and loose with the facts, but who ostensibly knew a shortcut, a cutoff, that would save days on the trip across the Oregon Trail. Which instead managed to get a bunch of people lost.
Does anybody get cholera?
No, there's no cholera.
Do they shoot bears at any point?
Large gay men? I didn't see any.
No.
Oh, okay.
See, we're from a generation that if you say Oregon Trail...
It means nothing
to
me.
...the computer game.
Oh, okay.
Where you eventually get cholera and die.
Dysentery,
is it? Do you ever get cholera? You remember?
You get cholera in the music lovers. Don't you know nothing?
It's dysentery.
But they have other...
I don't think
cholera is...
I'm talking like Apple IIe or Intrail.
I feel like there's like... Maybe it is just dysentery.
This conversation is way too intellectual for me.
This was an educational game, Ken. They had it in schools. It was that Number Munchers.
Oh.
I've heard... Never mind.
It's probably more exciting than this movie.
The movie is not meant to be exciting, but the movie is strangely fascinating.
Is. Exciting. Yeah.
Is it exciting? Okay, yeah. Well, this is not meant to be exciting. This is meant to be...
Watch a wagon.
More or less a depiction of what it would really be like. And it's pretty successful in that regard. And the fact that it managed to hold my interest for 104 minutes is quite astonishing. Especially because there are no star turns in this. I mean, you don't even get to see anybody's face for about 15, 20 minutes. They're always, you know, hidden or in shadow, or they've got this Wild West bonnets on. You can't see who they are. And if you want a movie that has a strong plot, this isn't it. If you want a movie that has a conclusive ending, boy, is this not it. But there's something appealing about the film that I can't quite put my finger on. It's stunning to look at in many instances, which is kind of surprising. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it does really convey the sense of people who are more and more convinced that the guy that has brought them here hasn't got a clue what he's talking about. And, of course, this results in a good deal of paranoia. And then we take on an Indian who some of the people want to kill, and some of the people think might be the only way they're going to find their way out of this. And it has a, you know, there is a story, and but it just doesn't play the way you would necessarily expect it. It's not a Western in the shoot 'em up sense. In fact, it's probably the anti shoot 'em up Western. The only time somebody fires a gun in this, it is such a laborious, time consuming process to load the damn thing that, you know, there's no chance we're going to have a shootout here. Of course, this is 1845. Most Westerns that you see are set in a much later time period. So, but I mean, I really recommend it, especially if you're looking for something different, because it's definitely different. So, what's this week's Thursday Horror Picture Show, and when?
And where?
And where?
Those are three questions.
All right.
Ken.
Well, tell me when, where, and then you can tell me why.
Well, when is Thursday?
Yeah, that's true.
At 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And
the where?
Where?
Is at the Carolina, in the lounge.
In the cinema lounge, yes.
Where it is every week.
Yes, I know.
If you haven't been.
This place gets so damn monotonous.
I know.
Telling him this week after week, he can't beat this into the Colonel's head for some reason. Yes. No, if you haven't been, this is a good time to start, because we're showing Son of Frankenstein, which, of course, you have not seen.
No.
And which I think is partly by virtue of the fact that you've taken Ian McKellen's line too much to heart, that I only made the, you know, with James Whale saying, I only made the first two, the others were all made by hacks. This is not hack work. This is actually the most expensive, elaborate, and longest, which is not, last part's not in his favor, of the Frankenstein series. It's the last one in which Karloff plays the monster. It introduces Lugosi as Igor, the broken-necked blacksmith who may or may not have stolen bodies, but who didn't quite die when they hanged him, except he now has a broken neck, which is a disadvantage, because if he wants to shake his head, he has to shake his whole top half.
So he dances the whole movie.
You know, it's... Yeah, it's a Stevie Nicks dancing. Yeah, from the waist up.
Well, you don't want Stevie Nicks dancing from the waist down.
I don't want Stevie Nicks dance. I don't want Stevie Nicks, period, frankly. Right. A woman that sounds like a sheep singing. Anyway, we are wildly off the subject.
Stevie Nicks is not in this movie.
Stevie Nicks is not in this movie, but Lionel Atwill is in this movie.
They're often confused.
They are.
One another.
As Inspector Krogh, who...
His short-lived career as a rock musician.
That's right.
He was often compared
to Stevie Nicks. Yes, that's true.
That's a little known fact.
Very little.
Some would say I made that up.
I could dish you some dirt on old Pinky, as he was called, to his intimates. This is if you've seen Young Frankenstein, this is where the dart game comes from. This is where the one-armed inspector with the prosthetic arm comes from. And it's almost as funny in this film. There is a dart game, and Atwill holds the darts by stabbing them into his prosthetic arm and then throws with the other hand. He supposedly lost his arm because when he was a young child, the monster grabbed him by the arm and tore it out by the roots. I didn't know arms had roots, but nonetheless, it's the words he uses. It's big. It's entertaining. Has a great musical score. Terrific look. It's probably the most elaborately designed of all the films. The problem is it's not, for the most part, terribly exciting, and it also proves that Whale was right in 1935, that there wasn't a lot more to do with the monster if he didn't talk, because this is back to a mute monster, and they can't really seem to figure out what to do with him, so as a result, he spends the first part of the film comatose on a slab, the second part of the film comatose on an operating table, and then he only really does three memorable things, one of which is so evil-looking that it's kind of out of keeping with what you think of for the Karloff monster. They've also given him a kind of ridiculous woolly vest and a nice beauty mark, which I don't know what that's for. I don't know why they gave him a beauty mark. And it's too early for it to be a Marilyn Monroe thing, so, I mean, and I don't know what it's for. The scene where he discovers Igor's body, however, is prime Karloff as the monster. It's an excellent scene. But the real reason to see the movie is Lugosi's Igor. And that apparently was a role that was padded as the film went along, because Universal, in their usual nice manner, thought they could probably cash in on his name, give him a week's work maybe. And the director was so incensed by this that he kept enlarging the part as the film went on, and Lugosi was on the set from day one until the final. So, anyway, if you've never seen it, you should see it. It's the last good, not great, but it's the last good Frankenstein film. Everything after that, I won't say they were directed by hacks, because they weren't, but they're not in the same league. So there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then what are we doing Tuesday?
Beats the hell out of me. What are we doing Tuesday?
We're going to record this crap again.
Yeah, I know we're going to record this crap again. This is not news.
And then after that, we're going to
That's right. We're going to show at 8 o'clock in the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina, just
part
like...
Just like the Thursday.
Just like the Thursday thing, except this is on Tuesday.
It's
the Asheville
thing.
Film Society thing. And we are showing The Magic Christian. Now, this is a film we've both seen.
Yes. It's a film we both love.
Yes.
I think it's a film we're both excited to show.
Yes. And I want to see how many people walk out.
I don't know if they'll walk out. I don't know if they'll laugh at it.
Well, there is that as a possibility. I mean,
I
a lot of the jokes are...
We'll sit there giggling.
The thing about it is a lot of the jokes, you're not going to get one time through. A lot of the stuff is so offhand. And there's things that you're probably, you know, unless you're really attuned to the time period... you know, I don't know how many people today immediately have a recognition of Christopher Lee in a Dracula cape as the ship's vampire. I don't know how much that, you know, is still in the, you know, current consciousness. The guest appearance by Spike Milligan will mean nothing to most people. If you're a Goon Show fan, if you're a British humor fan, Spike Milligan is like a god, so... And he started out with Sellers when they were both doing the Goon Show on the radio. So what you have is a movie, though, with Peter Sellers as the world's richest eccentric who adopts his only son and proge, Youngman Grand, who is a young man played by Ringo Starr that he finds in the park. And then the film proceeds to follow them around while you try and figure out what the plot is. It never tells you.
No.
However, you should be able to figure it out. You get Lawrence Harvey doing a striptease. You get a guest appearance by John Cleese. You get a guest appearance by Graham Chapman. None of these people were names at the time, so they're really just more like, they're not really guests. They're just sort of there. You get a guest appearance by Roman Polanski. Raquel Welch is given really high billing and has a scene, but it's a choice scene. And being Raquel Welch, she delivers her lines, putting all the emphasis on all the wrong words.
Yul Brynner?
Yes, you get Yul Brynner as you have never seen him before, and I pretty much can guarantee that. It's a film like no other. It is the most deliberately messy, anarchic thing that probably ever came down the pike. All this for what was at the time a PG rating. Even taking out all the topless women operating the ship's galley.
Right.
I would think that the climactic thing, just in content alone,
right,
would push this over the edge into an R. But it didn't. And you can come see why it did or did not this coming Tuesday. And you damn well ought to. So what's upcoming?
Well, I guess the big one is... Well, we talked about Meek's Cutoff.
Well, Meek's Cutoff is opening, and that's, you know, that's significant.
Is it now?
And
the other, the big.
Well, let's go ahead and get the Bill Cunningham New York documentary in,
right,
which
is going to be at the Fine Arts.
It's going to be at the Fine Arts, in which neither of us have seen. And then, of course, the big one is
X-Men First Class.
And let's hope that it really is first class this time. After the last one.
Well, Matthew Vaughn is an improvement over
Brett Ratner.
Just the sound of their names is Brett Ratner.
I found out that Matthew Vaughn is not his real name, though. His name is Matthew Devere Drummond. Now, I would have gone with that.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think Brett Ratner's real name is?
Brett Ratner. Would you adopt a name like Brett Ratner? Would you adopt Brett Ratner?
Yes, because if he was going to pay me, maybe. I don't know how
you'd
that would
put
out
up with him, yeah.
Oh, well.
So, anyway, that's what's opening this week. And is there anything
we'll
else?
We'll talk about them next week.
Yeah, we'll talk about them next week. And is there anything else of note happening?
No.
Anything that the radio, excuse me, pod audience needs to hear? So I guess that means
we're done for this
week. No. He won't let us go that easily. Okay. You know he's going
to
make us.
I know. I was getting to that.
Okay.
Kim,
we'll get to
if
it.
You would just give me a second.
No, well, go ahead now.
No, you're going to do it now.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I think we make Steve do it.
Steve's not going to do it.
If we tickle him, he might.
We have to say our goodbyes.
Yeah, they don't let us get
out
of here.
I was going to,
that.
And then can't stop
see,
me.
You're not familiar
with this. I've never listened.
Aren't
to
you wise? what Miami Steve wants here is he wants us to say that we are Ken Hanke and Justin Souther, and that we come to you through the courtesy, the benevolence, and the kindness of the Mountain Express,
yes,
and that the program is produced, cohered, and otherwise put up with by Miami Steve, the Colonel, Shanafelt. And I know there's something that I've left out.
Well, we tagged Squire on there.
Oh, yes, Squire.
Crocodile Hunter needs to go in
and
there.
And Crocodile Hunter,
and I feel,
yes,
like if we're going to put Squire at the beginning, we need to put Esquire at the end.
Squire, Esquire? That sounds redundant.
Yes.
I think we should have to think
no
about that.
Well, there's no other description for Miami Steve.
Then redundant?
And while he wants us to say all those things, we're not.
No, we're not saying them. So, to hell with you. We're finished. Turn the damn thing on.